Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Price of Football, the podcast that takes a look at the money behind the beautiful game, even though the beautiful game is still not being played. I'm Kevin Day, and around 65 miles away in rural Sussex is football finance expert at Liverpool University, Kieran Maguire. How are you, Kieran?
I'm very well, thank you, Kevin. Apart from a slight interruption the other night, when Sheffield Wednesday announced that their owners had been relieved of charges. They were being prosecuted by the EFL, and they've been dropped in terms of the charges. So that was at 10:30. I was in bed with the Baroness, and 10 minutes later, a phone call came through from a young lady journalist asking me for a quote, which wasn't particularly well appreciated at the time. The Baroness said, "Who's that woman on the phone?" And I was trying to explain that it was a young lady journalist. She could certainly hear the female voice at the end of it, but wasn't too impressed. I think it's fair to say that we had a bit of social distancing in our bed that night.
Probably got into a bit too much detail there, Kieran, but you know, you took the phone call because, as you know, you are a relentless self-publicist.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Who described you as that this week? It's somebody quite high profile in the game, wasn't it?
I can't remember.
But I'm sure the Baroness doesn't listen to this pod, does she? Because I don't think she'd be too pleased at you announcing that you...
No, she's got more sense.
Yeah. Who's that school... But I can see a photo. Is that a school photograph behind you, by the way?
That is my school photograph from 1980.
Oh, really?
That was the year I left college.
Oh, I was about to do a joke about you being a teacher there, but there you go.
Well, I have actually taught now in 5 decades, the 80s, 90s, noughties, teenies and 20s. So it's been a long time teaching.
Well, you're teaching me and you're teaching our listeners on this pod. I'm delighted to say, Kieran, we have a special guest joining us shortly, remotely, of course, in the shape of Danny Macklin, who is the chief executive of League Two club Leyton Orient. But before we talk to him, Kieran, there's a few things we need to talk to. This crisis is developing. We don't know how long it's going to last, but there have been a couple of good things coming out of it. Crystal Palace announcing they will be paying full wages for sick and self-isolating staff and casual workers. Chelsea donating the hotel at the ground to NHS workers for nothing. Gary Neville, Ryan Giggs doing the same with their hotel. So football is pulling together a little bit, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, and all credit to all involved, and Wilfred Zaha as well. I think it's absolutely fantastic what he's done in making some homes available to NHS staff. We've seen Robert Lewandowski give €1 million to help fight the COVID campaign. So, you know, football gets an awful lot of stick, but I think there are plenty of individuals concerned who are doing the right thing for the right reasons. I think we've also got to give credit to Manchester United and Liverpool, who have also committed themselves to paying their part-time staff for the remainder of the season. It's showing that people do have a social conscience, and football's not necessarily an impersonal industry which is just focused on money.
And it's nice because we did, before this probably blew up, we did hope that would happen as well, didn't we? And you thought it would happen. You knowing more about football finances than I did you suspected that Premier League clubs in particular would pull their weight and do the socially responsible thing.
Well, you always live in hope. And remember, ultimately, with football clubs, they're not institutions by themselves. It does come down to the individuals there. And there are lots of good people in the game. So fair play to them. And I hope that example will be followed by other clubs as well.
Now, we've seen the government offer help to salaried staff this week, which is not much use to the four freelance entertainers who live in my house, but I'm sure that will change. No indication yet that football clubs at a lower level, we're talking to Danny from Leighton Orient soon, that football clubs may get any help.
Well, I mean, the EFL have actually put together a £50 million rescue package. What they've done is that clubs were due to receive money at the end of the season as part of their broadcast income, and that's been accelerated, so that's going to help them to pay some of the costs. The EFL are also giving grants to clubs as part of that deal, which is good news. And as much as I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of former Goldman Sachs Brexiteer chancellors in the Tory party, I think what the Chancellor has done has also helped employers in terms of A, paying a contribution to board's wages, and B, sort of deferring some of the ongoing costs that you'd have as a business in the form of PAYE, NI, VAT, and so on. Now, it's not making those costs or all of those costs necessarily disappear. You're still going to have to pay the tax, but certainly the contribution towards wages at a time when everybody in the hospitality sector, in the travel sector, and in the entertainment industry is suffering because their businesses are being closed down, that's got to be welcomed.
Yeah. No indication yet officially of what's going to happen to the seasons. The EFL are very keen for the season to be completed, but the longer it goes on, the less likely it looks like it will be completed, is it?
I'm still hopeful. I think that from a perspective of litigation, it's got to be finished. You've got to finish 2019-20 because you can't start 2020-21 unless you know which teams are in which divisions. And there's no way the likes of Leeds United are going to sit down and just accept that they're not going to be promoted this season. So I think that there will be an effort to finish this season off, even if that means matches taking place behind closed doors. And clearly we've discussed this before, the Premier League clubs are in a better position. Better's not good though, but they're in a better position to be able to deal with that than the clubs in the EFL, who are more dependent upon match day revenues.
Now, one thing that has been confirmed since we last spoke, and literally the day after, was that the Euros definitely off. I don't think anyone was surprised. The only surprise is Tokyo still seem to want to have the Olympics. The Euros definitely off will have an impact on next season, especially on the women's Euros as well, I imagine. Or do you think they would try and run both those tournaments concurrently?
I think they're going to try to find some solution for this, but I think it will be very difficult. The Euros do take place over a significant period of time. They have managed to reach some form of agreement with the Copa America, so those two tournaments aren't clashing. Sometimes you have to go and tweak the timetable, and of course with the Euros being pushed back for 12 months, this might have implications for the start of the 21-22 season. And of course, that's going to lead into the World Cup. So there's going to be a lot of figures in this particular football jigsaw. But you've got to give some faith to the administrators. You know, they will be looking at their scheduling, trying to make sure that not too many things clashes, because it's in nobody's interest for that to be the case.
And I presume we're not looking at UEFA paying compensation to the countries that aren't having the tournament this year. They will simply have it next year, and any money will be deferred.
Yes, I mean, I think the hosts have probably already paid a large amount of money for the rights to host the tournament. So from a cash flow point of view, this is bad news for the FA, because they've committed to more matches than any other institution. So therefore, yeah, they were hoping to get that money back when the matches were taking place. So that will be a hit. So that will impact upon their ability to contribute towards grassroots football in 2020-21. But whether we'll be playing any grassroots football during that year is still up for debate.
Now, this is, I'm going to break off here with an indication of how bad I am at modern technology, because I just saw your dog in the background on Skype, as my cat came into the office, and for a brief millisecond I thought, we're going to have to keep those two apart, aren't we?
Well, yeah, my dog is actually very good when it comes to television. He actually saw me once on the television when we had a Sky cameras outside, and he ran in from the lounge round the side of the house and tried to get in and join in himself.
Well, you mean the dog's a relentless self-publicist as well?
Absolutely.
I imagine he's more used to seeing you on TV than in real life, isn't he? And the Baroness. The Baroness must wonder who this 6-foot bloke is wandering into the house.
Yes, I'm sure people will be mightily relieved when normal service is returned, and we can get back to arguing about VAR, which let's face it, for the first 6 weeks of this year was the most important thing in our lives.
I never thought I'd find myself saying this, but God, I miss VAR. it's interesting how both the BBC and BT Sport are plugging some of the gaps by showing old football. The BBC is showing old FA Cup games. The big match revisited is on BT Sport, and a lot of the rose-coloured glass is falling out of my spectacles because, Jesus, some of it's terrible, wasn't it?
It's terrible, and I think, you know, what about the pitches? I mean, it was rolled mud, and this is where professionals were paying up. And of course, you start off with rolled mud, which very quickly cuts up. I think we don't realise, because it has been something which has evolved over a series of years, just that in terms of the improvements in the playing facilities, but also the athleticism of the players that we accept as a norm these days.
Well, also, there was an old Palace game on the big match we visited last week that Ed and I sat down to watch, and the keeper picked up a back pass, and Ed was like, what are you doing? You can't. So I had to explain to him about the ever-evolving rules of football.
Yes. Well, you know, and unusual formations as well. You know, the idea of false number nines and 3-1-2-4s and so on. It was 4-4-2 or 4-4-2.
Yeah. Now, we're about to be joined by Danny Macklin, the CEO of Leighton Orient, technology willing. And if there is a breakdown, I'm guessing it'll be on my part. Before Danny joins us, before all this happened, what sort of state were Leighton Orient's finances in? Were they a club that were well insulated against problems?
Well, I think if you look at the history of Leighton Orient over the course of the last decade, they've been through some horrendous periods. The good thing is that they've now got a new owner who has been very successful in his own right. He is based in the States, but he effectively devolves responsibility on a day-to-day basis to the likes of Danny. And as a consequence, yeah, they've now been promoted back out of non-league football, which is really tough. You know, it's just as tough as getting out of the Championship into the Premier League. There are some parallels there, because the clubs that come down from League Two, they do have parachute payments, which the National League clubs don't have, and therefore they become sort of the big fish in the small pond, and they don't necessarily find it as easy as they think it's going to be coming back. So it's good news for Leighton Orient to be back in League Two. As a football fan, I've been there on many an occasion as an away fan, and it's always a cracking atmosphere. If you like your old school football stadiums, it's a wonderful place to visit.
I remember a game, 1979. It was the game before we got promoted, actually. So you know that season, Palace and Brighton were ding-dong in it. There were 19,000 people at Brisbane Road, a lot of them Palace fans, but it was a proper ground, wasn't it? You could look down on the gardens of the houses behind from the old terrace. But they're a club, they've only ever spent one season in the top flight. They're a club that's always struggled with bigger clubs just down the road. We were always talking on this pod about the Northwestern clubs, how difficult it is for them in the shadow of the Manchester clubs. But for Orient, it's just as difficult. They're not that far from Tottenham, not that far from West Ham. Still have a very loyal fan base who stayed with them in the National League days. But it's hard for them to maximise income, because they are a London club, technically, the same way Palace are. But they're a long way from the glamour of the middle of London where the tourists go, aren't they?
Yes, yeah, you're not going to get on a flight to Heathrow, pop on the tube, and say take me to Leighton. So
they have not for about a year anyway.
True. So, yeah, fair play to them in what they've done. I think what their approach is, we are a community club and we are a part of a local hub, and therefore that allows people to identify with Leyton Orient. It's a completely different experience to the Premier League, but it doesn't make it an inferior experience. It makes it different and it makes it more personal. You wish them all the best. It is going to be tough getting out of League Two. And if they want to, I think that their ambitions will be to progress, and that's right and proper. They've done well so far, and so far they've generated money to just about cover their costs. But those lower leagues, it's a nightmare in terms of the implications of COVID.
There's one really good way to wind up Leyton Orient fans as well, who in general are a genial, amiable bunch. But if you just tell them that you're everybody's second favourite London team, that really annoys them. Because they're a very difficult team to dislike, basically. And everyone seems to look out for their results in London. They hate that. They really don't want to be patronised like that, do they?
No, because your club is your club, and we quite like being feisty. We quite like being disliked. I mean, you must know that as a Palace fan, you're not exactly popular with clearly us at Brighton, Charlton and Millwall. And for some strange reason, Watford as well. I've got no idea why there's this beef between Palace and Watford.
Yes, you do. We've had this call. I can tell you exactly why there's beef between Palace and Watford, because they think Zaha dived for the penalty in the playoff final in 2013. We never had any beef at all before then, and he didn't, quite clearly, but they've done their best to get back at him ever since. That's why the beef. It's a strange beef. They take it more seriously than we do. Charlton and Millwall fans get really cross because we say to them, no, it's Brighton, we don't care about Charlton and Millwall. And what we have to do the same thing to Watford fans. Say, you can hate us as much as you want. It's Brighton that we hate. We don't hate you. You don't even register on our... we're just relieved we don't have to live in Watford, essentially.
Right. Well, I can sympathise with that.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
So we are joined now, as promised, by Danny Macklin, who's the CEO at Leyton Orient. First things first, Danny, thank you for joining us. Are all your staff fine? No reported cases? No self-isolating?
Yeah, 2 hours ago, that's what I would have said. We've made an announcement literally at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Unfortunately, one of our players has proved positive for the test. They've been in self-isolation along with the squad and football staff for 7 days and will remain so for another 7 days. So, yeah, that came as a bit of a shock as he's been showing very mild symptoms and nothing more than sort of a really common cold. But, yeah, he's doing well. And, yeah, we'll continue to follow the government guidance on that over the next 7 days. And, yeah, hopefully there won't be any other cases within the squad or with any of the staff as well.
Well, please God, yeah, of course we all wish him well. We spent a couple of minutes, Danny, just putting Leyton Orient into context for some of our northern listeners about where you are in the city and the size of the club compared to your bigger neighbours. But just remind us where Orient were in the table when all this stopped.
Seems like a long time ago. I think 19th or around there. So comfortably above relegation. That had become certainly no real consideration for a number of weeks now. Playoffs would have been a real sort of pipe dream with the remainder of the season that was left. So, yeah, comfortably and in mid-table boredom, as they sometimes called it. But, yeah, it was anything but. We turned a corner under Ross Embleton as head coach and were and hopefully are looking forward to the remainder of the season.
This is a difficult question, Dan. Can you give us any indication of what the last couple of weeks have been like for you?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, from a player's perspective, it's obviously, it must be so difficult. They don't know, and rightly, you know, I can understand it, and rightly so, how quick they're going to be able to get out. Will they be able to get out? And, you know, then you go to, you know, play opposition that perhaps aren't ready, et cetera, et cetera. But right now, it's just about a case of ticking over. Obviously, that our focus has switched with the player proving positive today. So it's, you know, very much the health and well-being of everyone connected to the club, first and foremost. But it must be very challenging from a player's point of view, and it's certainly challenging from everyone off the pitch.
Can you give an indication as well, how much match day revenue are you losing? What do you turn over on a match day normally?
Yeah, we've sort of looked at it from a point of view of what it does to the bottom line, and it's a reasonable five-figure sum that we lose per game, and it's not just our direct income from ticketing, it's the, you know, potential of season ticket monies that potentially would have to be given back, it's the secondary spend in the shop, the bars, programs, hospitality, sponsorship of the game, etc., etc. And it does add up to a large figure, and it's not just us that will be affected. It'll be our supporters club bar, it will be the bars, restaurants and takeaways, etc. in the near vicinity. You know, it's going to be affected, you know, across a large number of companies, not just the football club.
Kieran, I'm guessing that most clubs in League 2 have a similar in going out going situation financially, so would Orient be in the same situation as every club in League Two? Will some be better off, worse off?
Well, I mean, some clubs do have very generous owners who are therefore give slightly bigger budgets. I think Orient are trying to do it the right way, and you know, they set a fairly tight budget in that division, I think, and survive on that basis with a view to developing players and to ideally get into the playoffs and get up into League One. Certainly the figures which I've seen quoted by some of the other clubs in the lower leagues, they're talking, you know, 40 grand a week or 40 grand a home match, I think was the comments from the likes of Rochdale. Admittedly, they're in League One as opposed to League Two, but you know, it's a lot of money. Presumably, Danny, the scheme from the EFL and the announcements of the Chancellor, that they will give you some breathing space. Is that a fair comment?
It aids cash flow, and I think it's wise to praise everyone at the EFL, and especially Rick Parry. They've been, you know, forward thinking in this. They've certainly aided the cash flow, but yeah, ultimately it's money that we would have received, but yeah, it's very welcome to receive those now and in the very near future rather than when it was due.
Do you know, this is a horrible question to ask, Danny, but do you know how long you could manage without matchday income?
It's a really difficult one to answer. We are lucky that we have got an experienced board. We've got boards half American based, half UK based, and you know, they run multinational businesses, each of them, and have a wealth of experience. So it's a really difficult one to answer that. But ultimately, as a football club, we want to be sustainable. We can't continue to rely on benefactors. We have done over the last few years. They've been absolutely phenomenal since the takeover in 2017. And we were starting to get on the track. There was a huge, huge way to go to get to sustainability. And we defined that by getting close to break even. Prior to this, we genuinely believed that could happen, but it still has to happen. But first and foremost, we're worried about the health and well-being of the here and now of players and everyone associated. That's our top priority in course years.
Of course, yes. In terms of the players, how's this going to impact on player contracts? Kieran's given us some idea of what might happen, but have you got loans there? Have you got players whose contracts are coming up?
Yeah, we've got players out on loan and we've got players in loan from a couple of different clubs, including a Premier League team. And it is something that we're going to have to look at as and when we get nearer to hopefully getting back out on the pitch and playing. It's, you know, it's very difficult question to answer that at the moment. Yeah. But it's a complex field, and yeah, every club up and down the land will be having those discussions with parent clubs.
Presumably the 30th of June is a good date. If you could get all the matches completed by then, that would be one less problem to have to deal with. Would that be the case?
It would certainly be one less hurdle to overcome. But I think the reality of this, whenever we do start to play, and hopefully it is when, not if, rule books have kind of got to go out the window. You know, we're going to have to look about how those contracts will work. If it is to go into July and, you know, heaven forbid, even further into the calendar year than that, we're just going to have to think creatively. The authorities are going to have to think creatively, and the priority is that we, in a safe environment, get this season finished and without a huge impact on next season.
So Danny, talking to other CEOs and other chairmen, is your instinct is that everybody wants to get the season finished? Nobody wants it to stop now. Even if it's behind closed doors, you think the only fair way is to actually play football and end the competition?
That's what we're in the game for. We want to play. When you start or finish the season, we're obviously in unprecedented waters. But yeah, virtually, well, I think every CEO and chairman I've spoken to, we're in sort of daily dialogue with League One and League Two chairmen and CEOs, and that's certainly the desire at the moment. But as time goes on, how that desire can be realised, only time will tell.
Are you talking as well to the Premier League clubs near you? I mean, Spurs and West Ham are not far away.
We very much want that dialogue for now to go through the EFL. They right. will have, I'm sure, discussions with the Premier League in unison from a football point of view and from a finance point of view. But yeah, we first and foremost want to make sure we're doing everything we can, and we've worked on. I want to really applaud all of my staff. Absolutely everyone on and off the pitch has done a phenomenal job over the last 7 days to make sure we're reducing our cost base and giving us the best chance possible to reduce the loss that we're going to naturally sustain during this period, however long that is.
Well, your staff are also doing a sterling job in trying to raise morale and raise money with a sort of football tournament, a virtual football tournament, but mainly you've got FIFA 20 going on, haven't you?
Yeah, so as we speak, they're playing Lokomotiv Moscow in virtual Braga Group Stadium. And yeah, the work I talk about, praising staff, but there's two staff that really do deserve praise. It's my new media team of Luke and Dan, who relatively new coming to it. Luke, as the media manager, has just been a few weeks here, and it was predominantly his brainchild along with Dan, and they came up with the idea this time last week, and it has escalated into something crazy. We've now tried to monetize that for the greater good of EFL clubs, and we're well over the 50,000 mark now. And that will be also shared with Mind Charity, who you can imagine, sadly, will be very busy over coming weeks and months. And also to help a small part in to find the vaccine for this coronavirus, which the tournament wouldn't have obviously been in existence should it not be for the virus. So, yeah, the work they've done, the exposure we've given us has been absolutely phenomenal. It's great engagement with our fans and other fans at what is a very difficult and challenging time.
How's the game?
Yeah, 100, I want to say 132, somewhere around there. So you had to double it. Well, the interest was absolutely huge, and we have got, you know, absolutely huge clubs. You know, we're never going to play Lokomotiv Moscow in a European competition, or certainly not in the next few years. But yeah, we get to do it in a virtual world at least. And yeah, long may it continue in terms of that engagement.
What's the score at the moment, Danny?
It was 3-1 on my last update, but yeah, our goalkeeper, Sam Sargent, he's always boasted that he's a FIFA expert, so far he's going to get some ribbons in the players' WhatsApp group. But yeah, there's time to turn it around, and yeah, we'll find out if he's as good as what he says.
Well, we'll let you get back to the game. The one thing I do want to end on, you mentioned Mind there. This has really brought into focus the amount of work that football clubs do for their local communities, doesn't it? Not just charities, but individual people as well. They've become a focal point, which it's a good thing that people are starting to realise how important football clubs can be to their community, and how we need to get clubs through this to help the community at a time when they most need it.
Do you know what? I think it's been a sort of an opportunity. It's one that we probably wish we didn't have, to actually showcase what football clubs, whether you're a Premier League club or you're an EFL club, do within their community. And it often goes unnoticed as the odd snippet, but it's absolutely, you cannot underestimate all of the work that's put in by players, by community staff, often on relatively low wages. And it is absolutely, you know, first and foremost, it is nothing more important than that at the moment. We're doing a number of things to engage with our community, look after elderly and vulnerable, and we will be announcing in sort of coming days and weeks when it's appropriate of how we can play our small part in thanking our local NHS and social workers, etc. And you know, football is going to be in a really dark time for weeks and, you know, months ahead. But right now we've got to remember what people are really sacrificing, you know, on that front line, in the hospitals, in the wards. And yeah, football's important, and when we do get back out there, football will be a great release, but it will also be a way to thank everyone that's helped us through these very difficult times.
Well said.
Lovely words, Danny. And I promise you, we will talk again when times are happier, and when you're through to that FIFA final playing Bayern Munich. after you come back from 3-1 down against Lokomotiv.
You never know, but it'll be good to talk. We're doing an awful lot of from a club very different to what others, streaming soccer camps, etc. So it'd be good to discuss that at some stage. But yeah, always listen to the podcast, always a great listen, and it keeps me entertained on my long journeys into London.
Well, I'll tell you what, my first pint back at football will be at Sellers Park, and Kieran's will be at the Amex, but the second pint we have, we'll do it at Leighton Orient, mate.
You're more than welcome to Sparrow Group Stadium any time you want, gents.
Thank you very much,
Danny. Lovely. Thanks for talking to us, Danny. Take care now, mate.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
The Price of Football. So, yeah, Kieran, good words from Danny in a difficult situation.
Yes, I think Danny is a shining example of what we were talking about earlier, in the sense that football gets a bad press at times. Part of that is justified on occasion, but in the majority, I think the people we've met through doing this podcast have been good people wanting to do the right things for the right reasons. So I think he's a pretty inspirational guy. He acknowledges that, you know, the place that football is ultimately, it's a fairly trivial thing. And I think Carlo Ancelotti's comment that football is the most important of the unimportant things in life has never rung true, and we owe such a huge amount to those people who are presently on that front line.
We both owe before that. Well, I can't tell you how much I owe my family owe to the NHS, so it's no surprise to me. Our pod will be continuing. We've got a couple in the can already with questions, but Molly will have to. You've heard about Molly on this pod. Frankly, if Molly hadn't been here today, this wouldn't have happened. So we'll have to check Molly's diary, and when Molly's free, we'll carry on recording, and hopefully we'll bring you some positive news as well as it's going to be bad news, but we'll hopefully bring you positive news, and we'll certainly keep talking to you, and we want you to keep talking to us. So this is Adaptip production, as you know. If you do have questions, specific questions about your club and how they're going to get through this crisis, then you need questions@priceoffootball.com. If you want more information about the Baroness and about my cat and Kieran's dog, you know, Kieran's quite indiscreet. He'll happily provide details. So you can put those questions to priceoffootball.com as well. In the meantime, Kieran, I shall let you. The dog looks like he wants to be out for a walk.
But unfortunately, living in the country, it's quite easy for me to keep 2 metres away from anybody else. It's much tougher for people in the cities. So God bless and look after yourself, folks.
The Price of Football. All right. Stay safe. Take care, Kieran. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Price of Football.